Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
Produced by the iLab at WBUR Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Today's essay is about making friends in a really unusual place. Jeannie Venasco writes about her relationship with a woman named Anita in her essay, My Platonic Romance on the Psych Ward. It's read by actor and director Miriam Shore, who stars in TV Land's Younger. She's also appeared in The Americans, The Good Wife, and Jessica Jones.
Anita and I met 5 years ago as roommates at a hospital just outside of New York City. According to the brochure in our patient intake folders, the hospital's scenic grounds boasted rolling lawns, open meadows, forests, and a gazebo. But why would we care about the landscaping? The brochure reminded me of a commercial I had seen for Hulu while watching Hulu. We didn't need an advertisement for the hospital. We were locked inside. I was 28, stuck in yet another manic episode in yet another psychiatric ward. Anita was 24, experiencing her first manic episode. A lack of sleep had left her with purple crescents under her eyes. We sat on our uncomfortable twin beds and shared stories that would make new roommates in most situations uncomfortable. Anita told me that in the ambulance, she had suspected she was being driven to a secret location where a team of progressive political operatives would prime her for a presidential campaign. I knew the recent election was over, she said. This was for a future campaign. She looked down while confiding all this. So I offered my own embarrassing story. Once I was crossing the street and hallucinated that my eyes had fallen out. I held up traffic while I patted the ground, searching for my eyes. And that was our introduction. Because in a psych ward, friendships are reverse engineered. You start with the deep stuff and get to the shallow stuff later. Anita worked in finance. I was in graduate school for poetry. Our first day together, we shared a blanket on the couch in the common room and called ourselves feral shelter cats. It's a metaphor, we assured the nurses. We applied mental health criteria to saints and celebrities and laughed until we forgot why we were laughing. Did you two come in together? A patient asked. We just met, I said. The patient turned up the television to drown out our laughter. Anita said, I asked them if they put us together because I'm supposed to learn from you. I laughed harder. What did they say? No. More than 4 years later, Anita and I are still friends. And at the risk of sounding sentimental, she has learned from me. And I from her. When it feels as if entire universes exist between the real world and me, I call Anita. Because I know she has felt that way too. But at the hospital, the staff discouraged us from getting too close. No touching, the nurse scolded after seeing Anita lean her shoulder against mine. Anita thought it would relax me, and it did, until the nurse yelled. Another nurse discouraged patients from sharing phone numbers and email addresses. It's not like anyone stays in touch anyway, another patient said. For a year, this patient had worked on the ward. Now she was undergoing electroconvulsive therapy. Anita and I will keep in touch, I said. No, you won't, a staff-returned patient said. No one ever does. I almost believed her. This was my sixth hospitalization, and I hadn't yet sustained a friendship with a former patient. Several times I had tried. The first week would start strong, but then the chemistry would fizzle, just as my brain chemistry seemed to fizzle. Medicated, I missed mania. I idealized mania, focusing only on its good qualities: self-confidence, unbridled enthusiasm, quick thinking. Medicated, I felt dull. I would only disappoint. But this friendship felt too important to lose. I warned Anita of the potential setbacks. Even when we forget words or feel groggy and boring, we still have to talk. "Don't worry," she said. "We will." A week later, the doctors released her from the hospital. It felt like a breakup that neither person wanted. "I'll call," she promised. The next few days, I thought about our time together, using black crayons as eyeliner after the nurses confiscated our makeup, cracking jokes that even the doctors laughed at, and making "wish you were here instead of me" cards during art therapy. I was watching a manic patient scrub the already clean woodwork when another patient interrupted. "Hey, Anita's here for you, but they're taking her away." I bolted around the corner for the doors. Nurses were leading her out. "Anita!" I shouted. "Jeannie!" She stretched out her arm as if she were a melodramatic actor in a soap opera. But the serious look in her eyes told me she wasn't acting. The nurses hurried her along. "Jeannie! They won't let me see you!" After the doors locked behind her, I felt alone and listless. Minutes later, I received a call from her on the patient phone. She explained the hospital's rule against former patients visiting current patients. "Let me know when you get out," she said. In the weeks after I left the hospital, my vocabulary shrank as my medication dosage increased. Anita and I took turns calling each other. "I don't even know how to describe this feeling," I told her. "I know," she said. "It's not even a feeling." We struggled to be ambassadors of optimism. "Things will get better," we took turns saying, even though we doubted it for ourselves. We discussed side effects of medication and our attempts to hide our bipolar diagnosis from acquaintances and even some friends. We also bonded over our mutual hatred of group therapy. Our doctors and health insurance companies had basically demanded that we attend partial hospitalization programs. Think full-time group therapy ranging from dance therapy to anger management. Reluctantly, I took a leave of absence from my poetry program. She took a leave of absence from her job. In the evenings, she and I talked about how silly much of it seemed. I raged against dance therapy, while Anita believed she was secretly being given academic tests during her sessions, which felt unfair as her medication fogged her thinking. Soon enough, she returned to inpatient, and this time, she hated it. "It wasn't the same without you there," she said afterward. A few months later, I would return too, because my medications had stopped working. It didn't matter that my psychiatrist had increased my antipsychotic dosage. A meteor, an asteroid, and a cat toy were signs from the universe, and I'd gained 20 pounds. But this time I couldn't tolerate the other patients. The actor who complained about high fructose corn syrup in the ketchup. "Get over it!" I finally shouted. The stockbroker who snapped at the nicest nurse. The musician with Asperger's. I asked the nicest nurse if she could overrule the hospital policy about former patients visiting. "It wouldn't be good for treatment," she said. "Anita's or mine?" I asked. "Neither." When my new roommate arrived, she apologized for her depressed mood. She had been a patient when Anita and I were roommates. Last time, this patient felt suicidal. This time, she had stabbed herself in the chest, She lifted her shirt to show me her scars. "I'm afraid I won't be as much fun as Anita," she said. "Or much fun at all." "No, no," I told her. "This place isn't supposed to be fun." And then it hit me. Maybe that's why the rule exists. Anita and I used to lie to our friends that we met at some event in grad school. Now we tell them the truth. We were roommates in the psych ward. Then we laugh. "No, really," we say. Because things have gotten better. Neither of us has been hospitalized for years. In this time, we've earned multiple graduate degrees. Graduate school can be an excellent place for someone with a mental illness to hide out. She secured a job that I don't fully understand, something about pharmaceutical investments. I'm a creative writing professor. None of this came easily. We credit doctors, therapists, friends, family, the Affordable Care Act, and of course, each other. I still slip into mania and depression. Depression feels like a room with no exits. Mania, I won't lie, feels great. At least, that's how I remember it. Last week, I contemplated tapering off my meds or lowering them. "That's a terrible idea," Anita told me. "Mania rarely lasts for longer than a month," she reminded me. "It usually dips into a mixed or depressed state. If depression is a room with no exits, a mixed state is a room with no exits and an anxious crowd." I explained that I wasn't getting any writing done. Maybe one manic month, I told her, would be worth it for my writing. "Didn't you just finish a book?" she asked. "That doesn't count," I said. "Why?" "Because I'm not writing now." "Could you take a break?" she asked. "That sounds miserable." "Then can you try writing something short?" "I could try," I said, not even thinking I would write about us. "See what happens if you try."
That's Miriam Shore reading Jeannie Vanasco's essay, My Platonic Romance on the Psych Ward. We'll catch up with Jeannie and Anita after this break. Jeannie Vanasco and her friend Anita both joined us for this conversation. They live in different cities now, but despite that, they've stayed close. Here's Anita.
There was a period of time, 2-3 years after the hospitalizations, that, I don't know, we kind of traded off being in a good place, bad place. Like, and I remember that being like a huge part of our conversations and like stuff that we talked about. And it, now that I think about it, yeah, like it's kind of like faded.
And I think what's great, too, is there was the fear, like, oh, what about when we both get well? What are we going to talk about? And that was not a problem at all. I think that's why, like, in the essay, when I mentioned that we, you know, we got to the deep stuff right away, that really helped, I think, cement our friendship.
Yeah.
But Jeannie and Anita do sometimes look back on the time they spent together on the psychiatric ward, and they told us a little more about it.
So when me and Jeannie first met, I would say that she was just this, like, mentor figure or, like, guide that I had, like, in the psych ward.
Which is ridiculous. It was interesting. I'd been hospitalized so many times, and everyone was treating me in the ward like I was this wise sage, and they would come up to me. I'm like, I'm really the last person you should be talking to. We were popular. That's why it was kind of fun.
It was like the staff really liked us. And then the patients, like, it was like the first experience of popularity I think I had, like, in my life. It was nice, though. It was a good feeling. I get it.
But it's weird. Like, I think back to that time. I don't want to go back to the hospital. I don't. I haven't been back in, I mean, it's been years now, maybe 6 years. But I remember that time as being really fun. And when I did go back to the hospital after the time when I met Anita, and we weren't there at the same time, I just remember thinking, this is so boring. And I realized that that's fine. It should be maybe boring.
When they did get out of the hospital, Anita and Jeannie relied on each other.
I feel like for a while there, we were taking turns talking about how, you know, maybe I should get off my meds, maybe I need different meds. And I think there was a period where we cycled through at different times, both of us thinking, you know, maybe we don't have bipolar. But luckily, one of us has been in a stable place when the other one has not been in a stable place. And so that it's worked out well in that way, where we convince one another to stick with medications and treatment.
Stay on the meds.
Yeah.
Anita and Jeannie are in their 30s now, and they're both in a good place. Jeannie is an English professor who's written two memoirs. Anita still works in finance. And Jeannie says their friendship continues to remind her that no one gets through difficult times without help.
For a long time, I thought I had to do things on my own, or I thought I would be a burden if I asked for help. And what I hope people take from it is, and it's why I mentioned at the end the Affordable Care Act and, you know, friends and therapists, psychiatrists, and of course, Anita, that is what helped get me through. It wasn't one thing. It wasn't, you know, a medication or one doctor. It was just like this huge support network.
I feel similarly in a sense that I think what I learned from becoming friends with Jeannie and meeting Jeannie was to sort of just rely on other people. And like, if I was feeling badly, then like share that with somebody. And it's made such a huge difference in like my mental health and my well-being.
As for the Modern Love essay itself, Anita says that when she first read it, she was enormously touched. But she was also nervous about having their story out in the world.
But in the end, I was just like, I was so happy that I have it and I still have it. And the newspaper copy's always on my bookshelf. It's just like something that's really special to me.
That's Jeannie Vanasco and her friend Anita, who, for privacy reasons, asked us not to use her last name. Jeannie's first book is called The Glass Eye, and her second book out this fall is Things We Didn't Talk About When I Was a Girl. More after the break. Here's actor and director Miriam Shore.
I felt like this one really delved deep into this idea of what friendship is and what friendship can be, and the fact that it can really be a lifeline. And I was just really moved by that and by how it was told. You know, there's some really intense things being discussed in this, and she writes it so beautifully and poignantly and has such a funny, charming, and yet moving voice that I was really struck by it.
Thanks again to Miriam for reading this week's essay. You can see her now in TV Land's Younger. And here's Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times.
It really, you know, raises the question of what is involved in healing and what is involved in dealing with these psychological problems. It's totally understandable that friendships and relationships would be discouraged on the psych ward, and that as it was described, you don't want the psych ward to be a place that you think about fondly. But in this case, it seemed to be, you know, give each of them strength, and their relationship was something that helped them both there and after. And you could see why.
Modern Love is a production of the New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. Special thanks to Julia Simon, Anya Stremian, and Mia Lee at the New York Times. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Additional music courtesy of APM. If you love the podcast, rate or review us on Apple Podcasts or tell your friends to listen. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.